You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz in for Rob Ferret. Coming up, as children return to school, demand for COVID-19 tests rose around the state. We'll get an update on the availability of tests and which local governments are keeping mask mandates and other health measures in place. But first, we stick with jobs. Last week here on Central Time, we spoke about the Labor Department's most recent jobs report, and no surprise, we've got record-high job openings. We also talked about the ongoing number of people leaving the workforce, the Great Resignation, as it's been called. This week, we tackle another piece of the picture, organized labor. With more than a dozen strikes authorized or happening this month in a variety of job sectors, we wanted to take a look at what's going on to try to understand what's happening and what these movements can tell us about the state of work in this country. We want to hear from you. Is there a current strike or a negotiation that's captured your attention? Well, bring it to ours. We're at 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us, ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Michael Childers, professor at UW-Madison School for Workers. He spent many years teaching on labor management relations. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Molly.
So the big news today, we were thinking today there could be thousands of workers walking off the job in Hollywood, big production studios perhaps ground to a halt without thousands of stagehands and other workers, members of the International Alliance of the Theatrical and Stage Employees Union, IATSE. But over the weekend, we learned union leaders reached a tentative agreement with the studios to prevent the strike. What's the latest, Michael?
I think you just covered it. I think what's interesting is in IATSE's history is they've never actually gone on strike before. And this was an interesting time of their negotiations in that, well, you nailed it. I think all of us, after being stuck inside for so long, were pretty anxious to see new versions of the shows that they like and some of the new shows that are coming out. And that's led to a high demand for their labor. And honestly, it's one of the major issues that they were bargaining around, which is limits on excessive overtime and guaranteed breaks in terms of the number of days consecutively, et cetera, that they could work.
And so what do we know about the deal that they've reached now, the kind of key sticking points? You mentioned kind of a 10-hour work end of the work day.
I think actually, if I from some of the preliminary reports I've seen, it's going to limit the maximum per day to 14 hours, which 14. Is still an extremely long day, right?
Yeah.
We had original strikes over the 8-hour workday back in the late 1800s in this country. I think what's interesting, though, also is people aren't necessarily clear exactly how the whole process works when a union bargains with their employer. But in this case, the tentative agreement only means that they're now going to take the deal out to, and in IATSE's case, it's a little different as well. It's not actually members that will get to vote on whether or not to accept the terms of the agreement, but their elected representatives. So it's sort of like a representative democracy, like our Congress works, where it's not going to go out to all the members to vote on this. It's just going to go to certain elected leaders. And in this case, it's the leaders of the what they call, I'm doing air quotes, the Hollywood locals are the ones that have reached this tentative agreement.
So this affects just those bargaining units that were involved. So not necessarily all over the country, just the ones involved in directly with the Hollywood studios.
Yes and no, because that's exactly right. But that tends to set the pattern for what the rest of the country is going to basically be getting. In terms of that's sort of the major employer, those major studios, and now at this point, that includes Apple and Netflix. They set the bar, and then pretty much the subsequent contracts will mirror that contract.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so 14-hour days. What else was at issue with this contract?
Well, and let's be clear, it's not necessarily that they have to, it's that they wanted a ceiling on it. They wanted a
Yes.
cap. Because, and then you have to remember the context of LA too, right? Where a 2 hour commute is not unheard of. So you're talking about people, even with that cap, 17 hours door to door, right? In terms of their jobs, like it's almost like sleep in your car at that point. So, I mean, that was just one of the sundry issues. Obviously, pay is a big deal. I mean, the economy has seen a lot of pent-up demand, so of course workers are always looking for a raise. But yeah, there were many issues around working conditions, and I think they got some health and safety gains that they've been looking for in this tentative agreement. So we'll see where that goes.
All right. Well, also news recently, John Deere, 10,000 United Auto Workers going on strike last week, still continuing. What's at the heart of that debate?
It's interesting because they're all unique in their own way, which is kind of amused me as I've seen the hashtag Striketober trending. Because again, the workers are all individual locals, or in this case, a group of locals. It's the locals that are in Iowa and Illinois, that are members of the United Auto Workers. And they all have their own issues, right? They all have their own individual bargain with their employers. I would say that there is a common thread, though, and that the theme is around, especially like in this strike, in the Kellogg strike, in the strike that happened against Nabisco by the bakery confectionery workers. It's a pushback against workers giving up even more of their pay and benefits. In a time when these companies are realizing, in John Deere's case, shattering their former profit records. So I think it's also important to keep in context with Deere that not only are they shattering their former records in terms of generating profit, their last collective bargaining agreement did not sail through. It ended up being ratified by only a couple of hundred votes in 2015. So there's been some discontent for a while. And again, there's been some, the UAW has struggled at the international level in terms of leadership and had some malfeasance where they had to root that out. So I think on the local level, these folks are frustrated with Deere and they're a little maybe energized in terms of feeling like, look, we've generated this wealth for the company. We don't understand why you're coming to try and take some of our benefits.
So, Michael, do you think that this is happening right now that we're seeing, you mentioned the Nabisco strike, we've seen coal miner strikes, nurses. Do you think this is happening because of these macroeconomic factors of unemployment and so many jobs being open right now? What do you attribute?
And both, I think that's like that's the general context, right? I mean, you can understand what in I think the pandemic has an impact in that it's created this opportunity for many people to rethink, where am I at? Where do I want to be? You mentioned it in your intro that many people have become discouraged and are just opted out of the job market or reconfigured their lives where they figured out, based on what I was paying for childcare in this country, maybe I am better off staying at home. And again, I think it's in different segments of the economy, it's impacting in different ways. But I would absolutely agree with the idea that the pandemic, and then now, again, this pent-up demand that's occurring for in John Deere's example. I mean, in Kellogg's example too, right? Cereal wasn't a big growth industry until you couldn't go out for breakfast, and then suddenly demand is up for that. And yet, even as Kellogg realizes record profits, workers are being basically asked. And in that case, it's a little different. Well, it is similar actually to what's going on with the Deere, in that the proposals that the workers are faced with are essentially, we want to take some of your benefits, but then even on a bigger scale, we want to change where new employees will start in terms of the benefits that they'll start with or even have available to them. And what I'm thinking of particularly is, for example, access to like a defined benefit pension.
Okay. We're speaking with Michael Childers, a professor in the UW-Madison School for Workers. He spent many years teaching labor management relations at the Wisconsin School of Business. Conversation continues here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking with Michael Childers, professor in the UW-Madison School for Workers. We're talking about workers, specifically the ones around the country in all over who've either gone on strike, authorized a strike, maybe avoided a strike thanks to some last-minute negotiating. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. How are you viewing what's happening right now in organized labor? Are you affected by any of the current disputes? Tell us how things look where you're sitting. We're at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can always shoot us an email, ideas@WPR.org, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So, Michael, we were talking about some of the macro factors going on in the economy that have kind of positioned workers with more leverage right now. What do you think this means for the future of organized labor? If that's not too big a question.
Well, I don't know that we have enough time for that one, but I'll take a bite at the apple. I'll just say it this way. I think organized labor has been declining in numbers and percentage, market share, however you want to say it, for many years, right? Going back even, you know, the major precipitous decline started like in the early 80s in our country to where now it's, you know, barely 11% of the whole workforce and less, around 6% or a little bit less nationally in the private sector. I guess I would say that workers always want to be heard at work. They want a voice at work, and they want to feel like they're getting fair compensation in terms of that they get an equitable deal from their employers. And the way the system works in the United States, the really only way that you're guaranteed to be able to pursue those and not be arbitrarily dismissed is through collective bargaining. I think there's been a lot of news here lately around LGBTQ rights, the Me Too movement, where you've seen activists in different companies, Google, Facebook, Apple, summarily dismissed for bringing up, I think, what issues that most people would tend to agree with. But, you know, in that situation, if you're not in a situation where you're seeking to bargain collectively with your employer, then you really have no legal protections. And again, I think the job market, especially on the low end of the economy, or I guess on the entry level or the low wage service industry, the pandemic has definitely had an impact there, right? Because you almost eliminated hospitality immediately in terms of both restaurants and hotels, et cetera, for a fair amount of time there, which caused people to rethink, is 233, does that really make sense to work for that kind of an hourly wage? What are my other options?
Right. Well, Michael, the other thing I'm wondering too, though, is that for the sectors that you mentioned who could pay more, why aren't we seeing kind of are we seeing wages increase to, you know, as companies compete to try to attract a workforce?
I think we have. And I mean, we all have. I think if you follow the labor market at all, you've heard about the organizing efforts that have happened at various Amazon warehouse locations. You know, for many years, it was Walmart that organized labor was really anxious and interested in organizing because, again, these are the two largest private sector employers in terms of numbers in the entire country. And as go they, so goes the labor market in terms of that, you know, Walmart did, I think, again, just raised their entry-level wages, I believe, to $12 an hour now in all markets and higher in some. So that sort of sets a floor, right, in terms of when people are looking for potential employment, they know, well, if I go here, I'll make at least this amount of money.
Well, so you mentioned Amazon, and that effort ultimately wasn't successful. What do you think went wrong there from the union perspective?
Oh, if we didn't have enough for the first question, we definitely. I guess I would just say workers will exercise their voice and make their decisions based on the information they've had. I would say the other thing that's different now than 2 years ago, besides the emergence of the COVID-19 virus, is we have a different NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, which is a result of having a different presidential administration in place. And I think that potentially this board, they've already reversed many decisions that had occurred in the previous administration and will probably continue to exercise their role as the Department of Labor and the NLRA set out for the NLRB to allow workers to exercise their rights under the act and the seeking to be represented and to bargain collectively with their employer.
So you think that those changes might mean that you'll see another organizing effort soon?
Again, it's not that there aren't organizing efforts. I think that the other thing that I got my attention about the hashtag is you need a couple of key influencers to start using the hashtag and it catches on as a euphemism, right? I think workers are always organizing. It's just that it's not necessarily news. It's like local or maybe even regional news. For example, people that hear about Starbucks from time to time, but here in Wisconsin, Collectivo recently won an election. Their workers voted to be represented and now will be bargaining collectively with Collectivo, their baristas. So again, organizing is happening. It's just that it's not super sexy usually, and it's not the thing that will grab headlines.
Sure. Well, we've got a caller for you, Michael. We're going to go to Minnesota, actually, where Randy is waiting to join the conversation. Good afternoon, Randy.
Oh, well, thanks for taking my call. On what he just got done saying about it's not sexy, so it's not really news. I think the not news part of it is that almost all of the media relies on advertising for their funding, and the advertising all comes from people who don't want collective bargaining. I don't think the big oil companies or big tech companies, none of them want collective bargaining because they don't want us regular Joes to have any power at all. And if you can't collectively bargain, you can't really do anything.
Have you had an experience, Randy, yourself with it with the union?
Well, I've been in a couple different unions, and the last one I was in for 14 years was IBEW, 292, go union. And they made some really weak moves, I thought. And the whole allowing the two-tier stuff, that's a ploy. The two-tier, that's what John Deere is on strike about now. That to allow two tiers, there's the guys who've been there a long time, and the new guys are at a lower tier, is really disruptive, and it's meant to separate. It's to ununion the union.
Yeah, let's ask Michael about that, the two-tier system where established workers have one set of benefits and then a new hires are brought in under different conditions. Michael, what
Sure, all great points, and I this goes back to an earlier point that you made, Molly, and I don't want to discount it, is that in most of these situations, when the workers have reached that point when they're ready to strike, it's because they are angry and they're frustrated because they really feel like they're not getting a fair offer from their employers. And again, he makes the point about two tiers, and I think I'd already mentioned that that was a major part of the issues with the John Deere proposal as well as the Kellogg's, why the Kellogg's proposal and why the workers at Nabisco went on strike as well. Because again, to that point, is these companies are making record profits, and yet for whatever reason, you're saying that the people here helping generate that wealth are now in the future going to be somehow worth less or less necessary. I think that even the nomenclature of the pandemic, where workers were told, you're essential, I think they're starting to believe it.
Well, we had another call come in. Tom in Milwaukee says that he saw a survey that people under 30 have more favorable views of unions than the generation prior. Do you know if that's true?
Yes, it is. And one of the oldest polls that the Gallup survey has ever run is around union favorability. And this year, it was actually in the high 60s, and it was the highest it's been since the 1960s in terms of people's overall favorability towards unions in our country. And again, I think as we went through the pandemic, I think that people saw that, you know, workers that had been in, you know, the grocery industry at one point had a lot higher density even than it has today. And these people, I guess, you know, I'll go all the way back to Dr. King, that people should not be working full time and qualify for additional federal benefits, right? That wages should pay a sustaining wage that people can live and thrive and have a decent life.
Well, Michael, we've just got a few seconds left. What are you looking for next? What are you watching? Strikes on the horizon?
I guess, again, it will come down to if there's momentum. Organized labor had proposed some reforms to fix what they perceive as problems with the ability for workers to form unions. It was called the PRO Act, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. I don't think that that has a legitimate chance of passing, but many of its provisions have been incorporated into reconciliation. So it'll be very interesting to see how many of those survive this negotiation as the sausage gets made, so to speak.
We will keep an eye on that for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Michael Childers, professor in the UW-Madison School for Workers. He spent many years teaching labor management relations at the Wisconsin School of Business.